This is Suzanne Northrup at Blog Talk Radio on a Monday night in the Northeast, where it is a bit rainy, which we're not going to complain about it because we certainly need it. I'm just going to give everybody real quick ahead. The phone number to call in is 347-945-7785. We'll be doing readings, as always, toward the end of the show. I suggest you call in as soon as you can, if you don't mind waiting. Otherwise, I would say give it a shot toward the end of the hour. I just have a couple just real quick announcements here. I know we talked just a little bit about it last show, but I just wanted to thank everybody for a phenomenal, phenomenal weekend event in Omega. It was extremely special, and it was actually a holy weekend. It was Yom Kippur, which is unusual for me to do an event on the weekend, but it happened to be very special. But of course, then it's in relationship to the holy day of the Day of the Dead or of Atonement. So it was kind of on some level very, very perfect. And then for the rest of you, you know that I will be in Utah this week, out in Red Mountain, where I come every year, and then I'll be doing my Connecticut events. I got actually a couple of Connecticut events that I'm going to be doing TIC, and I'm going to be also doing Better Connecticut. So, you know, check those out. They're all on my webpage, which, of course, you know, it's SuzanneNorthrup.com or TheSeance.com, either one that you can get there. And do check it out, and always sign up for my free newsletter, and it'll let you know where I'm going to be and what is going on. I have to confess that this next author, but she's really kind of more than an author, but is deeply, deeply very dear to my heart. And for those of you that have known me over the years, you know why when I talk about it, when I introduce her. But I would say it's not only very, very dear to my heart, but I think that this is a must book for anybody who ever questions about our loved ones' connectedness or ever question, do we live after we die? I've done this work for a long time. Everybody knows this. And when I experience people that go through intensities in their lives and are able to come on the other side of that, quite literally, and are able to keep their hearts open and share their gifts, it's pretty special. But I want to read you something before I bring my guest on and we talk about the book. The name of this is actually called The Message of Love, although I would say that it was probably not titled that. It's in Corinthians in the New Testament, but nonetheless, I think it sort of says it all. Though I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And if I have a prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, as if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my good to feed the poor, and though I give my body, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long in its kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not rejoice in inequities, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, in prophecy in part, but when that is which perfect has come, then that is which apart will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know, just as I also am known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. Pretty powerful, powerful stuff, and there are lots of those things throughout. I want to be honored to welcome my guest, Bonnie McNeely. McEnany, thank you very much. The science book is called Messages, Signs, Visits, and Premonitions from Loved Ones Lost on 9/11. There are actually wonderful, wonderful stories throughout that. I'm actually going to tell some of my own personal stories, and it's going to validate actually some of the stories that are in the book. But when I read the book, and I did read it cover to cover, it was like what I have talked about in every lecture and seminar that I've done for the last 30 years of my life. Every bit of them is in there, from the numbers, from the visions, from the premonitions, from them coming to visit them, from the smells, from the radio, from all of the big things that are actually the little things that are actually the big things of how they go out of their way to let us know that they are, in fact, around us. And they do do that. We just have to always learn to open our hearts and our souls to do that. And I think when you lose somebody, particularly, in general, it's always a tragedy, but there are always things in our lives that sort of push the card or the envelope, they would say, a bit more on that. And I certainly think that the tribute of this book, through Bonnie, who lost her husband, her partner, her love, on 9/11, along with many other people, as you all know, wrote this book, and I always love it because I love when we have these left brain folks who all of a sudden are in a situation in their life where, oh my God, and it opens up a whole new door and a whole new wall. And what's wonderful is that they embrace that and they open it up. And in Bonnie's case, she even went on to write about it. Besides so many of the obviously wonderful things in this book, I think what you did, Bonnie, which I thought was extremely special, is that you gave a lot of people a lot of voice. And I really liked that. I mean, it's always been something that, you know, I did it actually in all of my books as well. And there's something that I think is very special when things come from people personally, because you get to know that person from, it's almost like getting to know that person from people that have shared those things out of the blue, and it always happens out of the blue when our loved ones make their transitions. They go to such unbelievable extremes to let the living know that they are around us. So I'm going to take it to be that was your inspiration for writing this book.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there were many things that guided me. First, I was a complete skeptic of all of this. I mean, I was a financial services executive, you know, commuting to work just like my husband was, and just never really thought that I would be exposed to anything as wonderful as I have been exposed after such a terrible tragedy. Mm-hmm. But the main inspiration is really, as you said, you know, you lose a loved one. It's the worst possible thing that can happen. And the extent to which the emotional healing and growth of all the people, I interviewed nearly 200, have been facilitated by these wonderful stories of faith and connection with the afterlife, really, you know, I think could be of help to almost anybody going through that, you know, difficult time in their life.
Yes, and you know, I mean, doing what I do for so long, I always say that, you know we're going to lose our mom probably, or our dad or whatever. We don't expect to, one, lose our children, and we intend possibly to lose our spouse, but certainly not at the age that so many people in here, you know, did lose their partners. But the other thing is why I think that this situation is, and I've it's interesting because the words that you said are the words I have to tell you I have heard from so many people, and honestly, a lot of people that have lost children, is that this was the worst thing that happened to me, but in other ways it was the best thing because I experienced a whole world I would have never experienced otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you said. But I think when you're dealing with a situation such as obviously a terrorist thing, it's very hard to move past a lot of anger and a lot of, and you really have to do that to get in touch with this.
Yeah, well, I think for everyone affected, we were all affected, but for everyone directly affected by 9/11, you know, in the context of losing someone, we all had to achieve our own personal balance for our emotional health, and that's different for everyone. How you do that is different.
Yes.
And for me, I sort of evolved into taking the spiritual route because just the number of people that I knew already, because my husband Eamon had worked at Cantor Fitzgerald on the 105th floor of the North Tower, and I knew so many already, and when they started sharing what had been happening in their lives with regard to connecting with the one they lost, it sort of propelled me in a direction I never anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, doing this work for like over 30 years, I'm always so constantly amazed to how people are so reluctant to share something about love in the sense of that, you know, you're nuts, but who cares?
Yeah, you know, Suzanne, you're absolutely right. And the one thing I've found is that people are afraid to talk about their experiences connecting with a loved one, after-death communication, mm-hmm. however you want to phrase it, merely mm-hmm. because they fear being ridiculed. It's almost now when I go anywhere, it seems like it's the unusual person who hasn't had an experience or at least is open to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, I get the question, why did so-and-so have a visitation or get a sign and I didn't? And, you know, I honestly don't know the answer to that, obviously. It's a bigger
answer. I know the answer to that.
Answer. Yes. help us all. That would help me for sure.
Well, I'll tell you something. I believe that they do. What I believe is this, again, only because, you know, this has been my path for a very long time,
yeah.
is that, number one, if you watch Hollywood, and we all know Hollywood's not real, you're not going to get a realistic expectation of what to expect. So, therefore, everybody thinks it's going to be this, you know, they're going to walk into the room. Now, people do see them, but that's the least form of contact, is sight. You know, it's all of the other things that you talk about in the book. It's the dreams. It's the electrical things going off. It's the radio things. It's those little things that we miss, you see. We miss them because we're focusing on these big dramas or these big dramatic happenings.
And, yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, and then when you do that, you miss those very special moments. And those special moments happen often very fast. So it's like if you're not receptive to that possibility of it happening, you're going to miss it. But what is so strong and so clear and what I think we can't get our head wrapped around the fact is that fact, their job is to connect with us. Fact,
mm-hmm.
their job is to connect with us because they love us.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to help us in our process because they know we're in the mess land. I mean, they know we are in the mess land. So they're going to go to their extremes to do what they can to let us know. Now, if we don't get it, trust me, they're going to go to somebody who's close. And that was perfect because there were so many people that your husband connected through so many different ways. So even if you didn't get it, which of course you did, he made sure you got it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because when I had my first spiritual experience, it was basically walking out on the morning of September 13th after we had been searching, you know, numerous people had been searching for him like all 9/11 families had been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
had an experience where on a very still day I called out, you know, I don't know what possessed me, but I called out and said, Eamon, please just tell us where you are. And this gust of wind kicked up with such force,
yes.
coming
mm-hmm.
from a single tree above my driveway, and I watched the pattern of it, and, you know, it was just such a unique thing. I knew it was connected to him. I didn't know if it
yes.
was Eamon himself communicating with me or God or something, but
right.
I knew it was
right.
connected to his loss.
Right. It doesn't matter. The point
right.
is that you knew. That's
right,
that's
exactly.
the key element is that you didn't you know poo-poo it, you didn't let it go to the, you know, to your left brain, you didn't go through the whole analyzing thing, which, you know, we all do. It's a human thing to sort of do, but there's got to be a fine line and a point where you need to move beyond that and just kind of like trust it, because I mean even people that are left brain people know in science things don't die. They may
that's
not know
right.
where they go. But they know in science they don't die.
That's
if you've
right.
studied, you know. So it's why should we be any different? And if you've seen somebody, you know, I like to tell people, I said I don't use this as a graphic example because it's, you know, it's kind of awful. But if you've seen somebody in a casket, you know they're not there.
Yeah.
You absolutely
right.
know they're not there. Where is that life force? So that life force has to go somewhere. Because that life form is what kept that body alive while they were
it's
in the body.
Physics. It's the physics around energy as a concept, absolutely.
Yes. So, you know, that's and it's so interesting how, again, that, you know, what I've learned and what, you know, and what I do is that if you just once you just all of a sudden open up, it's always the people say, like, I don't believe in that, but please tell me more.
Right, that's right.
They're the ones like, I don't really believe in this, but, you know, tell me more. That really, you know, they're on the fence, but they're really kind of over the fence. But, it's about love. It is the greatest force in the world, and it's all about love. So why is that so complicated?
You start. You start with. Well, at least for me, you know, the whole premonition side. So many people had a sense of foreboding in the early weeks and maybe the couple of months prior to September 11th. And my husband, what sort of started me on this journey was reflecting back to September 2nd when we were at a family gathering. And he, at that point, began a discussion about terrorists hitting the building, and he felt it was going to be soon. And the conversation revolved around this time, should he bring people to the roof or down the stairs, because he had been in the 93 bombing and had been credited with bringing down his coworkers. And, you know, that precipitated a whole series of alarming comments.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that he knew his death was imminent. And, you know, of course, I thought he was falling into some clinical depression or something and didn't really know what to make of it, you know?
That's our natural reaction. And if we all knew that the soul, the greater part of us that I'm talking about here, knows 4 to 6 months prior to passing that we're going to pass, irregardless of how we pass, the soul knows.
Hmm.
And that's why people say these out-of-the-blue things. And it was wonderful to read it because in the book because, you know, that is one of the key things that I discuss in every lecture that I have. Go back and think about what they did before. Go back and think about it.
Right, right.
And you're going to get a litany of things that are going to lead you quite obvious to the fact that somehow they knew, regardless of how they passed, that they're going to pass.
Well, clearly, I mean, the things that people wrote, I mean, Catherine Wolfe in her dream journal, her last dream was, I believe it was the 10th of August, and she wrote in there about, it was her first week working in the Trade Center, and she had just agreed to come a little earlier, and if she had not agreed to that, she wouldn't have been there, et cetera, fate playing a role. So she wrote about, you know, a bomb in the shape of a paper plane heading towards where she was sitting. Well, that's exactly what happened. A plane.
That's exactly
came
what
through.
Happened. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, her last entry. And then a poem by Diane Bullis Snyder that ended by saying, tell people you love them while you're alive. You know, I mean, not a typical phrase for someone. And she wasn't a poet. She didn't normally write things like this. And, you know, I could go on and on. It's just that there was sense of something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, I always, you know, liken to tell, you know, the two stories, and the one that was so significant to me was I had a client for many, many years who had lost her husband when her son was very young. And, I remained in contact with her over the years. And then finally, you know, he went to college, he went to law school. He was a brilliant young man. And he had gotten a job at Canton Fitzgerald. His first day at work was September 11th. And he was so excited about getting this job because it was a coup for a young man out of college, and that he forgot he left all his papers at home, all his briefs. You don't do that as a lawyer,
right?
And then what he did is he called his mother, because he got there early, of course. He called his mother semi-hysterical, and he goes, you know, Mom, his name is David, you got to come to meet me. I'll take the train down, and I'll meet you at Penn Station, you know, where you can come right off, you know, from the Midtown Tunnel. So he went down the tower. At that time was when the first plane hit. Then he was in the subway when the second plane hit. And he came up out of the subway on 34th Street, and his mother was waiting for him.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah.
My God, what a story.
And I could tell you about 30 of those stories, and it was just like, she, obviously, you're not going back to work, because, of course, she knew what was going on. But what continued in that story, and you have one of those stories in here, and I was flipped when I was reading it, because when she drove out, obviously, because you know it was a lockdown in the city, she was able to get through the tunnel, And then she got through the tunnel, and she lived on the North Shore, and she was going along the ocean. Of course, she was in total shock because, you know, meanwhile her son is sitting with her, and she's thinking, oh, my God. And she looks out over the ocean, and there are, like, millions of butterflies.
Absolutely. I mean,
and there was a lot of those stories that you talked about in the book, how people, you know, would see these, you know, tons of butterflies everywhere, because that's exactly what the butterflies do.
Well, the butterflies rose up from the site when the people were working down there, the rescue workers, and, you know, some of them, I've been told, you know, talked about them as the souls, you know. I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Wow. And as we all know, there was a very, very special for all of those workers that day that you know, quite literally what they went through. I think that had to be an intense job, and they need to be obviously honored. Well, you had some of those honorees in the book. The book is called Messages, Signs, Visits, and Premonitions from Loved Ones Lost on 9/11. The author is Bonnie. I'm going to let you pronounce your last name.
McEnany.
McEnany. Okay. We will take a quick break. This is Suzanne Northrup. The phone number is 347-945-7785. Yes, we will be taking calls. The line is full. If you stay on, you probably will get through. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment.
Visit Suzanne's website, www.theseance.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter, www.theseance.com.
Welcome back. This is Suzanne Northrup of Block Talk Radio, and my special guest is Bonnie McNally. I'm going to kill myself at this one. Anyway, it's Messages, Signs, Visits, Premonitions from Loved Ones on 9/11. Needless to say, I feel like I want to ask you this question. You didn't say this in the book, or if you did, I missed it. I know that, you know, you had obviously a wonderful love affair with your husband. And do you think that he gave you a message or inspired you to write this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my husband was a very gifted writer who couldn't see his own dream through. We, with Cornell University, published his poetry, you know, posthumously. And I absolutely, no question, he has assisted me on this project.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I knew that I had read some of his poetry, and it was quite lovely. And I figured, it's like, you know, how could he have written poetry and on some level not you know, be inspirational? The family grows old and dusty. Death lurks at each corner of our lives. The clock on my wall smiles. It is patient. I bless the fractional moment on earth that we have touched together. If nothing more, you, my family, have made me love. Pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about my husband, he's in the United States Hall of Fame for the sport of lacrosse. And when you meet athletes that also have this other spiritual, creative side, and there are many, I mean, it's a wonderful combination, because the athletic component had taught him about team spirit, love of team, you know, to care for the team throughout his entire life. And that's how he felt about the people he worked with on the 105th floor. And I often think that there were many things that could have kept him from going. The morning of September 11th, he had a vertigo attack getting ready for work, and he hadn't had that condition for over 9 months. and he decided to, you know, pull it together and go anyway. I often wonder, could he have not been with that team of men? How would his life have been if he had been the one that was spared? I question whether he could have handled
that. I think he would
that.
Have probably, yes. I think it would have been very painfully difficult for him.
Totally.
Because he would have, I mean, you know, there's always, they talk about there's always survivor's guilt and, you know, what that entails. That happens a lot, you know, what I've experienced within siblings of a family where a sibling passes and the other ones stay here and it's usually the favorite one or the only boy or the only girl or whatever and what the family goes through in relationship to that. So being such a team player, you know, I would say, wow, yeah, probably would have been painfully difficult.
Yeah, and many of these people he had worked with for 10 years, you know, and sat side by side with them, and a number of them are in the book, Joanne Kelly's story, Lisa O'Brien's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just been a wonderful thing for them to also be able to share the miracles that happened in their lives, keeping
mm-hmm.
them connected.
Yeah, well, that's why these things are so significant, because you really do get to share something that no one, unless you've really personally gone through, because, yeah, grief is, not to mention, an extremely personal issue to begin with, but in situations like this, you know, God knows you need to be so connected to it. I remember, like I said, I did a lot of pro bono work with the fire department through, I had connected with one of the women who lost her husband, and at the end of the session, you know, I said, you know, listen, I would love to give my services, and so she put together, you know, a few groups, and I have to tell you, I worked harder in those free pro bono sessions, I think, in some of the hardest paid sessions I've ever had in my life, because they were so, had been so, I want to use the word abuse, but they had been so devastated with the media on them all the time that they really wanted to make, even though I'm known and I'm well known, they wanted to make sure I was the real thing, that, you know, I hadn't found information about them. It was really, for me, a really interesting process. Obviously, the people that I saw more privately from, you know, Canton Fitzgerald and some of the people in Boston and Pennsylvania, it was a little different, because they didn't have this combination bonding like, you know, these fire department people do.
I'm sure it was very gratifying for you just to know that you helped them by allowing them to see that, you know, a loving relationship continues even across the life-death divide. And once you realize that, I mean, your ability to navigate the loss is a lot easier. It does take time. I do believe people have to go through the human emotions
There's no magic wand. Regardless of how much contact you've had, regardless of how many, you know, 40,000 meetings you've gone to, you know, your individual process is your individual process nonetheless.
That's right.
So I'm going to ask you if there's a few other things that you want to share with us, Bonnie. And by the way, this book, there are proceeds of this book that go to the 9/11 fund.
That's right.
So
the Voices of September 11th Living Memorial. Yeah, a portion of the proceeds go towards that. And that's the information. The Voices does wonderful work collecting from the families information on the loved one they lost that will be permanent record in the museum being built in downtown Manhattan.
That's wonderful. And I would say that if no other reason, everybody ought to go out and buy this book just for that. But even though I think that any of you that are sitting on the fence, which I have to honestly say, not, you know, my listeners, you're kind of preaching to the choir here. But nonetheless, I know that every once in a while somebody say, like, you know, listen to Suzanne's show, you know, it will, you know, you'll feel good, or she's got a great guest or whatever. And I would say, if you really are on the fence and you have any questions ever about whether you've received contact, if contact is possible, what really, you know, all the different ADC, you know, ways that it does happen, get this book. It will be heart-wrenching for you. You will have moments you will have to put it down. That I will tell you. I think that, you know, adding to some of the conversation that I had earlier about, you know, people poo-pooing it, I think, Bonnie, so much of it is that, you know, we have such a culture, and it's really our culture here, because around the world, and I know around the world, death is birth. It is embraced in life. It's part of your life. You know, you're not poo-pooed on the side. And our culture, it's just so, you know, we're so obsessed with the youth and the young, and we don't deal with this as part of life. We go to these kind of other extremes when it should be something that's embraced and part of life. Because, I got an email today from a woman on my newsletter, like, you know, my children, 5 and 11, you know, they're talking to me about contact with their father, you know, like, I know what to, how do I deal with them, you know, and it's because it's sort of like they're nervous about what to say to them, because if they go to school and they say something wrong, then, you know, the school psychiatrist, God knows what they're going to say, because I know personally this has happened.
Well, that's actually quite common. Typically, the children that I've found are 4 years or younger, because of their innocence and their openness to connecting with a parent they've lost. And one of the wonderful stories in the book is about J.C. O'Brien. She lost her dad, Timmy O'Brien, who worked with my husband. And J.C. was just barely 4, chattering up in her room. Lisa ran up and said, "Who are you talking to?" And she said, "Daddy and the boys." The boys was the nickname for a group of men on the desk. And Lisa said, "Well, who?" She said, "Who is here?" And JC said, "Well, it was Tommy McHale, and it was, you know, Farrell Lynch, and it was Eamon McEnany." She pronounced his name, and you know, she only met him. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And the interesting thing, Lisa ran and got a photo of a group of them sitting together, and JC was able to name each one of them, first and last names, that they had been with her in the room. So what do you say? And the other comment,
4-year-old, that they can't do that, right? Yes,
that's right. And the other comment I'll make is that, you know, I'm certainly not a psychic. I don't have the abilities that you have. I'm a layperson, but I can say that now, you know, the hundreds of people that I've spoken to, both for the book and after the book, there is nothing to be afraid of with regard to this topic. There is this Hollywood view, like you said earlier in the broadcast, that terrifies people. And even I will say, you know, when you read about the premonitions, sometimes people feel it's a little eerie, but you have to look at the big picture. You have to look at the whole thing together and what it represents, that there's more than this life, and it's all a positive thing.
Right, right. And, you know, and it's true, because people still go through the what if, could have, if I would have known. And the thing is that the signs are sort of there, and we may not know the specifics about it, but you have to embrace that as much as you have to embrace the connections afterwards, because it was as much a part of that journey as what happened in the afterlife, as the after effect of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Like you said, you know, I thought my husband was going into depression. Not that, my God, my husband's having premonitions.
Right.
You know, I mean, my husband discussed this at the table, you know, 5 days before with a group of people. It doesn't sound like he'd be somebody just at random that would be starting to talk about that. I mean, not from anything I gather from his personality, you know.
Yeah, it was very out of character, absolutely. The same thing people said about their loved ones who experienced this phenomenon where, you know, they were just sensing something, they were picking it up. How they do that, I don't know. Maybe you have, you know, a broader explanation for it, but clearly this was something that was not uncommon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it
points to, again, the bigger picture.
Well, after 9/11 happened, I got an email from somebody, I have no idea to the day who this person was, and she said that I was on a New York radio station, and she called in, and I told her that she was going to be in a building, and she would be coming up from the subway, and she would be okay from the building blowing up. I don't remember it. And she, you know, she recorded it. She had it on file from a year before.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, and I said, not to worry, that you would be fine. So do I remember that? Not a clue. But she remembered it, because she had taped it on, somehow she was able to tape it off the radio. And she kept it somewhere in the file, and for some reason, don't ask why. And she wrote me the transcript of it, you know, right after. She said, I want you to know that you you said this on the radio a year
before.
Wow,
well, that's very powerful.
Yeah, it kind of freaked me out a little too because that's not kind of my specialty. But I was obviously giving her information about that this was going to happen to her, but she was going to be okay.
Yeah, well,
so,
that's being more of a clairvoyant.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. I usually give dead people information. So it's just really interesting that came out that day. Or I was giving information from her, from one of her dead relatives. I mean, that's what I gathered. You know, the only way I could figure out how that information came out is there had to be some link there. But I found it kind of real interesting. that was another thing that I thought that was important that was brought up, Bonnie. This whole thing about I always tell people when you have children, 29 or 30 or 31 in your family, and they go out and they take life insurance policies, heed it, because 28 and 29, 30 year olds do not go out and take insurance policies out. They just don't. It's not in their nature. Now, maybe if they got a young family, but generally, if they don't, they go and do things like that. That's something to really look at.
Well, especially if the behavior, was totally different than what someone would anticipate who knew them well. I mean, and if that was consistently demonstrated by numerous people, then all of a sudden you have to say, what's going on here?
Yes, because again, there were in the book people who went out and increased their insurance policies. And people who ask, do we need more insurance policies? And their wife would say, well, what are you being? You're being ridiculous. You know, well, they weren't being ridiculous. They were sensing something, even if they don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And there was that, that it's, and it's interesting because, when we go through natural transitions in our lives, there's usually always a bit of anxiety if you're moving or you're changing jobs or you're changing relationships. So, we naturally go through anxiety with that. Why would this be any different,
Right, exactly.
I mean, why would this be any different? So, I want you to share a little more because, it's wonderful to have somebody in your, situation who really, grappled and came to grips and said, no, this is nothing to be afraid of. This is really something to embrace as part of your life.
Yes, well, the experiences that I had personally were, sort of along the lines of Carl Jung's synchronicity, but the odds of these events occurring were just far too great for them to just be coincidence, so to speak. And one in particular, that many people still don't have any remains of the person they lost. And I was fortunate because 5 months after September 11th, I got my first call. And it wasn't actually a call. I was at a meeting of 9/11 family members in a neighboring town. It was the middle of winter. It was February. It was freezing. And there was a knock at the door. And I opened it, and there was my pastor and one of the heads of our local police department. And, of course, when you see that, you're immediately in shock. Why are they here? And, basically they said, or one of them whispered to me that they found Eamon's remains. And, I had come to the conclusion that they never would and had sort of a scenario in my head that allowed me to navigate that. And so that was dashed, and I was in shock. And we left, and the minister said, why don't I drive you home? And I said, okay, and we got in the car. And just a little bit of background, when my dad was alive, he had a home on the water in Florida, and there was a great blue heron that used to parade around in front of his house, and they developed sort of a friendship, if you will. And so when Christmas, my husband wanted to get him a glass replica of the bird and went all out to try to find one and finally did. And the bird became a connection between the three of us. And that glass replica was a favorite possession of my father's. So the minister's driving, and all of a sudden I realize he's turning into our local cemetery. And again, ice and snow on the ground, biting wind, and we had only gone a little bit in, before you hit where the graves were. And out of my peripheral vision, I see this huge shadow, and a bird with a giant wingspan lands in front of the car, and I realized it was a great blue heron. And in the middle of winter in New England, with my minister, the whole thing, all of the components, I knew that clearly it was a spiritual message, and he felt the same way. And So that was another thing. I mean, that just couldn't happen like that.
No, we don't. Blue herons don't even. I don't even think they are in the Northeast. To be honest with you, they're definitely Floridian birds. bit chilly for them.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, they do show up. They do show up in the warmer weather, and once in a while there's a sighting. But to have one in the cemetery, you know,
right.
Yeah, it's just too strange and too unusual.
Right.
And so those kinds of things happen to people. And, you know, again, as I started talking to individuals, and, of course, I myself have not had a visitation the way people describe it, but so many people have had these visitations. I've called them sensory visitations because either they've smelled the cologne or the aftershave or something that was indicative of the person being present, especially when they're in a period of deep grief. On mourning, they heard the loved one speak to them. That's very common, where they all describe it the same way, a voice outside their head connecting with their mind but not traveling through their ears.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, feeling the embrace at a time of need, a hand on the shoulder, to seeing, their loved one's spirit. And so many talk about this. Some have seen their loved one more than once. And a number of these people I knew before 9/11, and they're all very grounded individuals. So, to hear this, and again, having people describe it in the same way over and over, obviously they're telling you what happened to them.
Yep. They sure are. They sure are.
And for you, this is so common. I mean, I would imagine when you get your messages, do you see the person? Do you just hear from them? Do you feel their message? How does it happen?
Well, it's really all those ways for me, Bonnie. But, I had this gift as a child, and I think, again, when you have things as children, I think it's very different. A lot of mine is audio. That's how I'm able to get names and things of that sort. And, I'll feel how they pass, their presences. It's interesting, one of the common themes that I felt with a lot of people that passed in 9/11 was this sense of heaviness in my chest, like coughing. Like,
mm-hmm.
My lungs being filled up,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people, boom, like a boom, like boom, boom.
Yep.
You're in like a boom. So I knew that although we always wonder if they're in pain, it's so fast. The trauma was just so fast for many people that they just left their bodies, just boom. But sometimes if they did go up and down the stairs, or I found that they'd gone up and down the stairs, I would feel the smoke up in my chest and the lungs. And then there would be the quick passing. But there always seemed to be the sense of the boom.
Well, let me ask you, when you connect with the loved one of someone who was lost on 9/11, and you've had this happen a number of times, is there some other message you get from them beyond what they want to communicate directly to their loved one that's consistent?
Well, first of all, communicating with their loved one is the most important thing. I mean,
right.
Across the board. That's
right.
They need to let them know that they're fine and well. But I have on occasion, not with every session, but I had gotten exactly the thing that you said about your husband, and that was the group. It was there were firemen. It was just like, I couldn't stay here without my best friend. I couldn't have stayed here without my brother. I couldn't, we needed to stay together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That came with a lot of the sessions that I had with the firemen. Some of the sessions that I had with the other people that had passed, but it was a very strong theme among people that were connected with within a particular area. I mean, more than just like people that you worked with.
Right, right.
There
a brotherhood, a sisterhood. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Family.
And that theme, interesting enough, because there's certainly a thing of group passings. I mean, it's been throughout history. I mean, the people pass in groups throughout history, whether it's war or, or things like this. And there's most definitely a group connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So of souls. Yeah.
Yeah, well, just in the suddenness of it, as you said, I mean, just really unprecedented in our country, in our lifetime,
Yep. And we know it's still going on.
Yeah.
And it's still going on. The book is called Messages, Signs, Visits, and Premonitions from Loved Ones Lost on 9/11. I told you, go out and buy the book. Proceeds go to the memorial. Bonnie, this has been my pleasure. We will be doing readings for the rest of the evening. Please take care. Keep in touch. Let me know what's going on. I mean, this is wonderful work that you just did.
And you're doing wonderful work. Thank you so much for having me.
You're really, really welcome. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with the phones and lines. For stick on, I'll try to get through as many people as I possibly can. Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Visit Suzanne's website, www.theseance.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter, www.theseance.com.
Welcome back. This is Suzanne Northrup at Lock Deck Radio. We're going to take your calls. Hello, who's there, please?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Hi,
Hi Suzanne.
To, please? How you doing?
This is Patty. I'm great. How are you?
All right. Very good, Patty. How are you doing?
Good. I love Bonnie's book.
Isn't it wonderful? Have you read it?
Twice.
Oh, wow. Yes, it's a very, very special book, and I was very proud and pleased to have her on the show. I knew for so many of my listeners like you that it would be really special to have her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, really special to have her. Yes. Okay. Real quickly, Patty, who would you like me to connect with, please?
Can you just see who's around me?
Okay. I got a couple people. Now, I'm just going to ask you this quick here, Patty. There's a male presence that's coming in very, very strong. So your dad has passed?
Yes.
Yes. Did he lose a brother or did somebody else lose a brother like a same level, like a brother, brother-in-law, or husband, please, Pat?
Yes.
And who's that, please?
That's my father's brother.
Okay. Now, they're coming together. Now, did you know this uncle?
Yes.
Okay. Because it's interesting. There's a distance between the both of them in terms of their passings?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And somebody has a very strong spring birth or passing. I don't know if I'm in, like, March or April, but I feel like I'm right in the middle there somewhere.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm also going to ask you, who's James or John connected to them, Patty?
James or John?
Yes. It's a J name. It's like it's a sharp J name, like a John, a James, a Jack. It has a very sharp sound, unless it's a female that sounds like a Joan, a Jane, a Jean. I'll hear those sounds alike.
Are they past?
They could be somebody here. Yeah, they'll identify by living people that are connected to them as well.
Okay.
All right. And I also want to say I'm hearing the name William. There's a W name also. It's either William or a Walter.
Oh, my God, you're stumping me.
That's okay. Write them down. All right?
Yeah.
Now, which one of them had a lot of lung problems, Patty?
My dad.
Okay. Was that smoking or is that lung issues?
Both, actually.
Both. Okay, because I feel like one passed from that, from what I'm gathering.
Yes,
and
he did.
When he comes through, he comes through as being very different than his brother, by the way, just for the record.
Day and night.
Yeah, that's day and night, definitely day and night. And I also wanted to ask you this, please. Okay, now you're not, okay, what happened to where he was living? Do we still have that place?
It's still there.
It's still there. Okay. Is it not connected to the family anymore or what?
No, it isn't.
Okay. Because from the way he's talking about it, Patty, it was either what I call either very nostalgic on the family, or the family had it for a long time, or we lived there for a long time, or something.
Yes, he built it.
Yeah, it has, like I said, a very strong sense of nostalgia for me. So that usually means we are very, very connected to it.
Yes, that's true.
Yes. Now, is that the same place that either has what I call a pond or a lake or a river behind it, a non-still water?
No.
Okay. Where's the place where I'm picking up water that they spent time?
It could be my camp.
Oh, it's your camp. Got it. Is that where you are now, or is that connected to you?
That's where I am right now.
Oh, wow. Wow, isn't that interesting? Okay. So did your daddy spend time there?
He was here once when we were building it, but he was not healthy enough to stay.
Got it. Then obviously he's making honor to that. Isn't that sweet? Wow, that's pretty sweet. Okay, I'm going to tell you one other last thing here, Patty. Who has the dead dog, please?
I do.
Well, I want you to know he's at my feet here, and Daddy's taking good care of him.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, in good hands, in good hands, in good hands. And one other last thing here. Your father did get to meet your husband?
Oh, yes.
Yes, because he talks about being connected also to the son-in-law, so I'm going to take that to be quite literal.
Yes, our families were very close.
Yeah, it comes in as being very strong, and that comes as being very important to him.
Yes, absolutely. I understand that.
Yeah, and it's quite significant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
More than you know.
Okay, well, he's giving you that honor.
Great.
All right, Patty, you have a great night, all right?
Thank you so much, Suzanne. You take care.
All right, be well.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hello?
Hello?
Suzanne? Hello, who am I talking to? This is Suzanne. Who am I talking to, please?
Billy.
Hi, Billy. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very, very well.
Good.
Okay.
My daughter.
I was going to say, this is a young girl that's here. Quite strong here. Yes. Two things I want to ask you, Billy. When she comes through here, would she have known she was going to pass?
I think she did, yeah.
Yeah, I really get that she did, too. Now, she's not your only daughter?
She's my only daughter, yep.
All right, but she's not the only child. But she said she's not. There's another sibling, but she's the only favorite daughter.
No, that was my only daughter.
Yes. There's no other children. But I want to ask you this. Who's the younger male that she talks having connection with then, please?
Then it would be her son, Andrew.
Oh, that's her son. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your grandson. Wonderful. Because she talks about the younger male that she left here.
Right. That would be Andrew then.
Got it. Okay. Now, she's telling me, now, was he young when she passed, Billy?
She was 30.
Okay, but was the boy young?
The boy was 3.
Yes, thank you, because she's telling me from when she passed, she has watched him grow up from the other side.
She says, I get all kinds of senses for her, that I know she's around.
Wonderful. Well, he says most definitely she keeps an eye. Now, I'm going to assume you're still a big part of his life. Yes, Billy?
Oh, yeah. He comes over 3 times a week.
Wonderful.
He comes Friday, stays over. Oh, yeah. He's
wonderful.
One of my main reasons for living, I tell you. I lost
you
my daughter.
I understand, honey, because I'll tell you that this connection is extremely important, and she wants you to know she feels very honored by your strong connection. And he's, by the way, he's got a lot of your family blood.
Yes.
I mean, he definitely has a lot of his mama in him.
Oh, he does, yeah, a lot of things he does. You can see his mother in him,
Yes, and I got to tell you, your daughter's very strong, and I'm going to tell you why. She showed up in the caller before her. I kept asking her, who was William?
You know, William was my name, Billy, and she also said Jay, and the girl that was with her when she died in her bedroom was a girlfriend named Jill.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Because I tell people that this happens, and if you can't connect with it, then it's got to be with the next person, because it was very loud and very clear. That's pretty amazing.
I was thinking about that today when I read this little article that said, your best friends last with you when you die, and it was Jill.
Wow.
So I heard you say it, I said, that sounds like Chris Ann's coming through. But the other lady couldn't answer, you know. It's like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I guess she is. All right, Billy, you have a really, really great night, all right, and be well.
Thank you so much, Suzanne.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you. This is tight, but we're going to try to get this person in here. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, who am I talking to, please?
Oh, hello? Can you hear me?
I can. Who am I talking to?
Okay, my name is Ann. How are you?
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
Okay.
Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Okay. I hope you're off the road and you're going to have to talk real clearly because it's coming in really, really jaggedy.
Okay, I'm off the road.
Okay, very good girl. All right. Who would you like to connect with, Ann?
I don't know. Whoever comes in, I guess. Sometimes many people come in, so.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I'm actually getting two people very strong online. I'm getting a male and a female, I have to tell you. I'm going to assume that this male is your daddy.
Okay.
Okay, and the woman that comes in is above him. So I'm either picking up your mom's mom or your dad's mom. Both of them are coming together.
Okay.
All right. And I want to tell you, when they come through, I have to tell you very loud and very clear, I'm smelling roses, Ann.
Okay. That's good.
So I don't know if that's somebody's name or it has another significance to you, but it's very loud and very clear.
I'm just thinking angels when you say roses. That's cool.
Well, as long as you know what I mean, that's all that matters. Now, I am going to ask you one other quick thing here. Who lives near the water, Ann?
Who lives near the water?
Yes. Or who lived near the water? I keep getting like by, and this is not lake, this is like by ocean. I keep feeling somebody lived by ocean. I feel like I'm on East Coast by ocean.
Well, my sister had a house by the ocean on the East Coast when they were alive, yes.
So your sister's passed too?
No, she's not.
She's not. So who's connected to her that passed?
My parents would have gone to that house. It would have been that far from their house.
Got it. Wonderful. Okay, so that's both your parents identifying by you and your sister then. Got it. Okay,
right.
Wonderful.
Right.
And who am I hearing, and with a very strong L-sounding name, but it sounds more female than male. I don't know if I'm hearing like Lynn or Linda or Liz or something, please.
I know it's Susan, but I don't know who the L is.
Is there an L connected to the Susan person? This comes like at the beginning of a name or a middle name or a last name. Who's Susan connected to, please, Anne?
She was a friend of mine that I worked with. In fact, the both of us worked in the World Trade Center years ago.
Oh, wow. Isn't that interesting? Okay. And she's passed?
Yes.
Yeah, but she didn't pass in the World Trade Center.
No, she passed after
No,
that.
I'm getting that she didn't pass this. She goes, no, she's telling me no, she didn't pass her. Because that's the reason why I'm asking you is this. She comes very much like a sister, I have to tell you.
Right. They're both
that's
Aquarius.
Why.
Both Aquarius.
Wow.
About 2 years apart, yeah.
Wow, interesting. Okay. Fabulous. Okay. So we're really running out of time.
Okay.
And you take care, all right?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay. That was a real rundown. We tried to really do that. Just real quick here, I will be doing my big event in Connecticut, October the 24th this year, and I will be on WTIC, and I'll be doing Better Connecticut. Check out those. They're all on my webpage, and I'm going to be actually in the hot place of Utah coming into this this week. I'm going to be at Red Mountain Spa. If you're out that area, come and check us out, and it's always really, really quite wonderful. And, again, you can just check out my website. That I've got a lot of places coming up here. I'm going to be in Baltimore. I'm going to be doing the Hope for the Holidays in Roanoke. I'm going to be doing a big event for the Hope for the Holidays also in Marlboro, Mass. This year again. So as always, go to my website or get my newsletter downloaded to you. You'll know where I'm coming from. And I really want to thank Bonnie again. It was really very, very special show. It's a special book, and it's really nice that Patty actually read it twice, so that's pretty cool. So this is Suzanne Northrup signing out at Block Talk Radio, and I hope everything you want may be yours.